Hello and welcome into this week's episode of You Seem Interesting. I'm recording this Christmas week, so happy holidays to one and all. We really appreciate you guys making our show a tiny part of your lives. It's an honor to get beamed to that cellular phone while we just relax. We just chill out. Max and all cool, shooting some b-ball outside of the school. Couple of guys up to no good, starting to make a trouble in my neighborhood. You know the rest, and we do the podcast. Thank you guys so much, as always, for supporting the show. Thank you so much, too, to the folks who are on patreon.com/funnydanny. You guys are the best lifeblood of the show. It makes us go. We really appreciate that. Again, patreon.com/funnydanny. My guest this week is a guy named Brian LaFemina. Not a household name to a lot of folks, but somebody that I met when he was in Washington, D.C. for a brief time with the then Washington Redskins. It's made a real impression on me as somebody that I've, you know, kind of looked up and got to know a little bit and followed. He's now the chief business officer for LA 2028. He's organizing the Olympics, and it's a massive undertaking and one that he is uniquely qualified for. We'll speak to him in a moment, and we'll get kind of the nitty gritty here when it comes to it. But first, as we always do about this time, it's the moment where we have the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting.
It is once again time for the strangest gimmick in all of podcasting. A moderately passable celebrity impression asking you for money.
Identify yourself to the world,
Dr. Lenny Pavel.
You must go to patreon.com/funnydanny. Let us not stand on ceremony here. Wayne.
It's a Bane voice. Threw the Bane voice at you, right? Deal with that. A lot of fun. Good times. Good times. So, Brian LaFemina, LA 2028. So let me just go a brief little bit of history here, okay? I mentioned this. A couple years ago, I met Brian when he was brought in from the NFL offices to work, and he was basically the team president, sort of marketing outreach type person for the then Washington Redskins. And he was the kind of guy that right away comes in, commands a lot of respect, both because his great career, he was with Madison Square Garden Network and again, the NFL at large, and somebody that had been around and had seen a lot of different situations and was really really good at bringing people together. That was kind of the reputation, right? So I meet Brian. He's kind enough to donate his time. He came into our studio, did the show with my co-host Grant Paulson and I, middays on 106.7 The Fan. And immediately, after just 5 minutes of talking to this guy, you just felt like you knew him your entire life. You felt like you guys had this history together, and you grew up in Brooklyn, New York, where he was. And you guys both went to Rutgers together. But just the feeling you have from this guy, he builds connections. That's what Brian LaFemina is a connection builder. He inspires. He makes people feel good about themselves. He makes you feel like you're part of whatever that thing is. And he gets a degree of buy-in. Really, really qualified. Really, really excellent in that kind of capacity. So when I just happened to get one of those LinkedIn updates, right, that you get sometimes. I saw that he had been named the chief business officer for LA 2028 for the Olympics. I said, that's perfect. Because what the undertaking is when it comes to an Olympics, there's infrastructure. And listen, LA is already a massive city. It's already got tons of infrastructure kind of already baked in, hence the appeal maybe for the Olympic Committee. But you get that sort of ability that Brian has to make everybody buy in. And it's all the way down to the lowest levels. That's not the right term, but sort of the base levels, right? Everyone from your bus driver to your city planner to the mayor, to state offices, to U.S. government, to the IOC. Brian is somebody that can organize. Brian is somebody that can motivate. Brian is somebody that can make sure we're all in this together, for sort of feeding out of the same trough, pulling the rope in the same direction. Whatever cliche you want to use, that's Brian's special skill set. Because think of the infrastructure that it takes, right? You have to have sports venues, stadium venues. That's number one. LA already has that, right? They've got iconic college venues, be they the Rose Bowl, iconic pro venues. The recent stadium constructed for the Los Angeles Rams is unbelievable, maybe unparalleled, honestly, in all of sports. So they've got stadiums where things can take place. Good to go there, right? But then you start talking about how to house not only the athletes, but international training staffs, dignitaries, representatives, a huge swell of people for a fortnight plus, basically roll into your town and have to have everything set up just so that these athletes can compete at this incredibly high level. they're going to compete at. That's what has to happen, because you can't have one of those situations develop, God forbid, where, yep, all the athletes in the athlete village ended up with pink eye, or everybody got stuck and had food poisoning because something happened at the commissary. Whatever it is, these guys and gals work for years to build up to compete at the very, very highest level in their respective sports. And it's a once every, 4 years, and in this case, 5 years, when you look at the pandemic year. This year's Olympics pushed back to 2021. It's the culmination of being exactly in the right place at the right time, being in your prime, and being able to compete. So all the logistics can't be less than perfect. They've got to be perfect. And it's a binary when it comes to the Olympics, right? When it comes to a lot of other sports, you say, well, it's a weekly game or it's nightly. And if, something isn't great or your plane gets stuck on the tarmac, as I remember happened, again, I'm here in Washington, D.C. But there was a story about the Nationals a couple seasons ago where, they were coming back from Milwaukee and headed to Philadelphia and their plane was on the tarmac until 6 a.m. That kind of stuff, it can't happen with the Olympics. It's not a daily sport. It's not one of those things that evens out in the wash. It's every 4 years, and only a select few even get to make the trip to represent their country in the Olympic Games, and everything's got to be just so. And Brian is a guy that will make sure every I is dotted, every T is crossed, and everybody's on board, again, pulling that rope in the exact same direction. And he's someone I've admired for a long time, again, since I first met him. I'm not just gassing him up because he's on the show. He's somebody that I think is uniquely qualified to do this and kind of bring these Olympics, a successful one, to Los Angeles. So we'll go over some of the logistics with him, go over some of the challenges, and we'll pull out some highlights afterwards. But that's enough intro, enough flabbering. That's not the right word. I was trying to say like bloviating, flabbergasting. That's not even a word either. I don't even know what I'm talking about. Here's the point, though. Brian's excellent, and he joined me. Enjoy that conversation. Excited about my guest this week. Brian LaFemina is the chief business officer of LA28. He's bringing the Olympic Games back to the U.S., back to Los Angeles. Brian, how you been, man?
I'm good, Danny. How are you doing?
Doing very well, my friend. Really appreciate the time. I'm fascinated by these sorts of things. And kind of what I've done on this show is I kind of learn about people's industries, how the sausage gets made, some of the behind-the-scenes type stuff. So here's my question for you. What goes into putting together an Olympic bid? I have to imagine that's such a massive undertaking.
It was a massive undertaking, and I wasn't actually there during the bid phase. I was fortunate enough. I came in May of 2019. So LA had already won the bid to host the 2028 games. But the bid was interesting in a couple of ways. One, it was the most transparent and inclusive bid in Olympic Games history. It actually began in 2015. In 2017, the IOC took the unprecedented move to award two Olympic Games at the same time, 2024 to Paris and 2028 to Los Angeles.
So once the selection happens, right, you're brought in and the preparation's already underway. What's like the biggest project that has to happen first? Like what dominoes have to fall? And then maybe what's the most critical project, even if it's not first?
Well, I would say there's so many critical projects, it's hard to isolate it to just one. What I will say is that our bid was unique and our games will be unique in that we don't have to build any permanent construction, which is usually a big undertaking for any organizing committee. So the fact that we have just an absolute abundance of fantastic facilities keeps us from having to spend a lot of our time at the end of the day having to build anything from a physical infrastructure standpoint. So it's really unique in that regard, and it's going to make us the most sustainable games in Olympic history.
That's fantastic because, I mean, you've seen that. It's happened after the fact, where you go, hey, here's this stadium that was used that time, and then that's sort of it. Or here was, this housing that eventually kind of ran into, became nothing. And the idea that it could be sustainable in that way, I think, is incredible. I think I mentioned in sort of the back and forth getting ready for this that I visited Barcelona, I think it was a decade or so after their Olympic Games, and it was just an empty stadium. And so that's fascinating, and that's really interesting. You guys are using kind of existing infrastructure to already do it. So how will that work? Is it sort of rented? Is it donated? I mean, what logistics have to happen for all those ducks to be in a row?
Well, before we get into the deal stuff, I mean, you're a sports guy, so just think about this for a minute. A city like Los Angeles, we've got the LA Memorial Coliseum, which yep. will be the first building to ever host three Olympic Games, 34, 84, and 28. Mm-hmm. SoFi Stadium, the best stadium in the world. The Rose Bowl, one of the most iconic stadiums. So you've got three 70,000-plus-seat stadiums.
Right.
You've got the Staples Center. the Clippers are building a new arena. You've got the Dignity Health facility, which is in the South Bay, which is where actually the Chargers played as they were getting ready for SoFi. Mm-hmm. The LA Football Club Stadium, which is right next to the Coliseum. Then, mm-hmm. you know, be remiss to leave out our university partners who are so important, USC, UCLA, where we're going to have the Athletes Village. And in most Olympic Games, you're actually building
right.
a multi-billion dollar Athletes Village that you then turn over to a private entity afterwards. And the California state system is also involved. As it relates to, you know, how we're going to do this, you know, we're coming up with partnership agreements with all of our partners in the business, and they've been fantastic. They all believe that, you know, what's good for LA is good for them, and what's good for the Olympic Games in 28 is good for LA. So this isn't just about staging the Olympic Games. And, you know, we often say internally that if all we do is put on a well-run Olympic Games, we will have failed in our mission. It's about so much more than that. And really, really working with our city partners and our commercial partners to lift up the entire region and to find a way for the Olympics to be additive to everybody's life in Southern California and then more broadly in the United States.
What are some of those dynamics that come into play when you're talking about whether it's a university, Brian, or if it, you know, it's a local ordinance, municipality, governing body, whatever it is? What are some of those challenges? Because everyone, you know, comes with their own, whether it's an agenda, I don't want to say bias, that's not the right word probably, but sort of their own ideas of, hey, this is what's best. And it can not necessarily, it can be maybe in conflict with maybe what's best for the games and your view of the city kind of long term. What are some of those challenges to kind of work out?
Well, when you started a few minutes ago and you said sort of what are the big challenges, that's what our job is.
I see.
Is how do we find a way to make sure the Olympic Games and the Paralympic Games all fit into what our partners need to do? And obviously, everybody's, you know, needs to give a little to get an event of this magnitude, you know, up and running. But we've had fantastic relationships so far with all of those entities. We talk to them every single day and we're trying to figure out how we can be the least disruptive to everybody's ongoing operations and the most additive to, you know, to everybody involved. So whether that's the students on many campuses that we're going to be utilizing, or whether it's our business partners from the commercial entities that we're going to host the games with, it's really about finding how we can together be great delivery partners for the Olympic Games and the Paralympic Games. And I didn't say that up front, but I'll also say this is going to be the first time the Paralympic Games is in Los Angeles. And we just see so much growth and energy behind the Paralympic Games that we're super excited about it.
No, that is awesome. And you're right. It shouldn't be discounted. It should absolutely be mentioned. Your background in the NFL, and I want to get to that and how it's sort of governing or helping what you did today. That's how we got to know each other when you were in Washington for a year. But you came as, you know, from the NFL offices and, you know, with Madison Square Garden for so many years. I think a couple decades there, if I've got my numbers right. How is that, you know, sort of wild success that you've experienced, I think by any measure, as a guy on that side of the aisle, when it comes to pro sports, how has that sort of translated, maybe governed your thinking when it comes to the ultimate in amateur athletics, when it comes to the Olympic Games?
Yep. Well, first of all, I think everything begins with the community you're in, the fans and the athletes. So if that's your North Star, you've always got a great chance of success. And you have to always remember, no matter what you're doing, that, you know, whatever you're involved with, it always comes down to the people and the culture of your organization. So, you know, we know who we are, we know what we're here to do, and we're all excited about it. And as I said, this isn't just about staging the games, although that's, you know, that's what we do every day, but the goals are much broader than that. I would say that, you know, working in really complex organizations like Madison Square Garden, like the NFL, has been really helpful for me, because if you're going to succeed there, you can't focus on just one aspect of the business. Mm-hmm. You really need to take a holistic approach to problem solving. And I would say that the Olympics is without a doubt the most complex event I've ever worked on. It's certainly, I think it's the most complex event in the world. So I think those lessons from previous stops have been serving me well, you know. And when you think about it, Danny, you think about the events for the Olympic Games, or 20 some odd events for the Olympic Games. One of our events is a World Cup. When you think about it,
right?
You've got the soccer, you've got the soccer competition or football competition that any other time would be a World Cup, and it's just one of the many events that's going on at the Olympic Games. So that gives you a sense of the complexity of what this endeavor entails.
So one of the other sort of governing factors, you mentioned the IOC, it awards the games. And I think a lot of people, myself included, without really thinking about it, just assumes they award the games and then they show up and cut a ribbon and everybody claps. I bet it's not like that, though. What's the oversight? What's their relationship with the city? How much input are they having? Maybe not daily meetings, but just in terms of, you know, governing principles and how they want things a certain way. What's the relationship like there between the IOC and the host city like LA?
Well, like everything else, Danny, it's a partnership. I'll say they're very helpful. You know, one thing, as an organizing committee, or an OCOG, as we affectionately call ourselves, when you work in an organizing committee, you have to remember that, you know, the IOC does the Olympic Games every 2 years. We're doing it once. But we are the delivery partner. We're the ones who are on the ground making everything happen. So it's got to be a true partnership, and it is. We understand that we certainly can't succeed without each other. So we leverage each other's strengths, and we make sure that we, you know, put this event on, because it may sound a little cliche, but I really believe that this is, you know, one of the seminal events in the world, and it truly has the opportunity to make the world a better place through sport. And we all take that very seriously, and you know, we're in it every step of the way with the IOC, and we do speak every day. Some parts of our organization are talking to the IOC every single day, and it's a wonderful collaborative relationship.
How's the pandemic affected everything? I mean, listen, it's enough years away where I'm sure you feel maybe like you can make up ground, but this has affected everybody in some way. You know, at best, it's been a lot. At worst, it's, you know, we kind of know some of the numbers and things. How has the pandemic affected you guys' preparations and sort of daily plans, and what workarounds have you come up with?
Well, the pandemic's, you know, forget about the Olympics. As we all know, it's affected everything in our lives. We start with the most obvious as it relates to the Olympics, which is the postponement of the Tokyo Games, mm-hmm. which will now be this coming summer in 2021. Clearly, you know, business disruption. But, you know, you take it down a notch, just personal disruption for everybody in the world and everybody that we're working with. And that goes for our partners and our sponsors and, you know, our employees. And, it's been, you know, across the board disruptive. But the thing we are incredibly proud of is the way we were able to pivot and utilize our time really wisely, and we think, you know, make some good headway on the planning for the games. So, you know, one of the things, as an example, one of the big things that we committed to in the bid phase was making a $160 million donation to youth sports in Los Angeles. And the pandemic sort of pushed that back, just because, you know, the city isn't really going forward with those programs right now, but we're completely committed to it. And we figured out a way that we could, we could continue to do that once the pandemic is behind us. So those are a few of the ways that it's certainly impacted us. And I think on a broader scale, just operating in an exclusively digital environment. And, you know, as you think forward, it's like, what are the long-term implications of that? I don't know what the future looks like, but I'm pretty sure we're never going back to work exactly the same way we did again. And because we're on this 8-year path to the games, you know, we have to figure that out as well. So it's been, you know, challenging but exciting. And I would say brought everybody in our organization closer together, even though we haven't seen each other in person for 9 months.
So you mentioned the digital element of things. I think that's, you know, that's the world. And I think, you know, before March, I'd never heard of Zoom, and now it's the most normal thing on the planet. I think it's a very astute point. How much of that do you think is going to carry forward for you guys when it comes to digital? And I can't imagine where technology is going to be in 7-8 years, et cetera. How much of that do you think is going to be carryover in terms of marketing, digital, and kind of reaching folks?
Look, it's part of the world now. And I think what you have to figure is, you know, the pendulum had to swing so far and so fast because of the pandemic. When it swings back someplace, where does it sort of find its level? But we're giving a lot of thought to that in all parts of the business, because we understand that, you know, I don't think Zoom calls are going away anytime soon. And that's a great tool in certain situations. The human element will never go away. I think being together is important, but I think there are ways that we are going to find ourselves being more efficient from the lessons that we learned over the last 9 months.
Well, and let me say this as clearly as I can. You're going to be modest about this, okay? But when We first met a couple years ago when you were here in D.C. After 5 minutes of talking with you, it felt like we've been buddies our whole life. That's the power that you have. That's the ability that you have to make people feel welcome and engaged, and you're so good at that. And any of your answers that you've already given, you didn't say I once. You said we, right? As talking about this team and sort of, you know, allowing credit to sort of, you know, cascade off you like an umbrella and go down to everybody else. I think it's one of the things I've always admired most about you, Brian. How is that still something, even in this sort of era that we're in, where everybody's got a TikTok and everyone's branding themselves and it's me and I, how are you able to maintain that and sort of allow yourself to let other people tell you how great you are? I mean, is it ever a challenge? Don't you ever want to go, I deserve some credit for this too, but you always sort of maintain this discipline, and I've always been amazed by it. I love your comment on that.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I'm a little embarrassed by all the compliments, but thank you. And I wish my wife were in here right now and I could say, see, honey, people like me. But I think Danny, it all starts with, you know, sports was such an important platform for me growing up. It was a huge part of my life. In many ways, it helped me in everything else in my life. And nothing to me is of higher value than being part of a team and doing your part, whatever that part is, to help that team achieve success. And, you know, when you think about the scale of the Olympic Games, we're roughly 70 something people right now in our organization. You know, we're going to flex that up to, you know, 6,000 full-time employees by the time of the games, tens of thousands of people who are going to be volunteers, not to mention the countless consultants. This truly takes a Herculean effort to put something like this on. And if anybody tries to make it about themselves, they will fail. You know, we have to understand that we all have our role to play. And at the end of the day, it's about the goal. The goal isn't just putting on a successful Olympic Games, although that's job one. That's table stakes. How can we make Los Angeles a better place to live? How can we enhance the lives of Angelenos? How do we make our athletes who come from all corners of the world, but, you know, with a specific emphasis on Team USA, proud that they came and were competed in the games that's in their home country. There's so much good that we can do that, you know, if you make it about yourself at any given point, you're going to miss the true beauty of what being on a successful team is. And so I know I can speak for all of my colleagues when I say we have a singular minded purpose in what we're here to do. And so that makes it just a delight to work with those people and to come to work every day.
So you came on board in May of 2019. Obviously, everything is different. Everything is weird. The whole world has certainly changed. So that may be the easiest answer here when I ask you this question. But what's something you never thought you'd have to deal with that's now on your to-do list, right? When you've done these things at the highest levels with the NFL for so many years, Madison Square Garden, dealing with these like major, major, huge deals and undertakings, what's something now that you can't believe is on your to-do list, but it doesn't change the fact that it is?
Well, I think we talked about it a little bit already, which is that sort of digital transformation of the workplace and of the way that you do business. You know, there are things we've been working on that I probably would have, you know, been in Europe or in Asia multiple times in the last 9 months, and you had to figure out ways to get things done in a totally new way. So that's, you know, that's certainly part of it. And I'll also say just, you know, one that you and I can both relate to, SoFi Stadium. So, you know, I was fortunate enough to work on that project with the Rams for a while when I was at the NFL. And the fact that stadium has been open all season, we haven't set foot in it, right? And so being at these facilities and understanding them at a deeper level, you know, that's one that, you know, you thought you'd be able to do on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, we just have to find different ways to achieve those goals. So I think the pandemic has been, without a doubt, the biggest curveball of what you never thought you'd have to deal with in 2020.
Sure. Certainly true, I think, for a lot of people. Kind of related to what we've talked about already, but give me a challenge that folks wouldn't know about, you know, from the outside looking in. Obviously, not many people can relate to being the chief business officer for the LA Olympics in 2028, but give me something that's kind of a hidden challenge that maybe folks wouldn't know at first glance.
Oh, gosh. I think it's the level of, and you would imagine this, right? But when you think about coming into a city to stage the Olympic and Paralympic Games, you know, over a 25 or so day period. There are so many pieces of that puzzle, everything, you know, from communications to security to transportation. I've given more thought to, transportation infrastructure and, you know, how do you get people and athletes who are staying at the Athletes Village at UCLA down to the South Bay? How long is that going to take? How do you make sure that you have the appropriate, the buses and infrastructure and lane closures and, you know, all these things that you take for granted when you go to a big event? And whether that big event is, you know, the Super Bowl or a World Cup, you know, you sort of get on your bus or your car and you just go. And, you know, the thousands of people who were a part of, you know, making it even possible to stage it, is amazing to me. And while I certainly had an appreciation for that, I've had such a much deeper understanding in the last 2 years from working on that. So, you know, and what amazes me is just the, like I said, the tens of thousands of people who are going to be a part of making everything work here and then coordinating that, right? It's one thing to say, hey, we're going to throw people at it, but then it's almost like it's a symphony. You have to have everybody doing what they need to do at the right time in the right place or the whole system breaks down. So it's really that it's thinking about the staging of the individual components that will lead to, you know, ultimately a successful staging of the Olympic and Paralympic Games.
I want to sort of retouch on the political element of things for a second. This is going to be a poorly drawn analogy, but bear with me. Years ago in D.C., there was supposed to be a little baseball field built, right? It was going to be good. It was where I went to college. It was going to help. And somebody from the little neighborhood commission stood up and did this big grandstanding moment because they were hoping for eventual election to the city council. Right. And they sort of used this thing as their platform and got their name in the paper and everything else. Obviously, nowhere near the scale that you guys are talking about. But is that a potential sort of hiccup here that somebody could use the pub and the eyeballs to kind of grandstand or maybe some other kind of hiccup when it comes to state, local or national politics? Is that a threat's not the right word, but is that a potential obstacle that you guys have planned out?
Well, I think that, you know, you have to go back and take a look at the bid. So, you know, LA 28 as an organization is an independent, nonprofit, nonpartisan organizing committee. LA 28 had bipartisan support from the city, the county, the state, and federal governments. And obviously that's unique to have bipartisan support on anything, you know, in this day and age, but we did. The LA City Council has, you know, they voted unanimously to support the games. They have an ad hoc committee that works with the 2028 Olympic and Paralympic Games. So we have an open line of communication there. You know, state and federal government are critical to making sure that we have a safe and secure games. We have full bipartisan support in Congress. So, you know, it's really been wonderful from the standpoint that, you know, everybody in local, state, and federal government have been supporters of ours, and regardless of what side of the aisle you're on. So, you know, we're going to take that and run with it you know, we are confident that that's going to continue to be the case. This is such an opportunity and such a moment of national pride when you can host an Olympic Games and host the world in your country. And then obviously, you know, in the city of Los Angeles that, you know, we feel really good that we've got, you know, support up and down.
Last one for you. I've kept you too long already. But again, your career has been so cool and you've gotten to do so much. And now you're out there on the West Coast with your funny New York accent. I'm sure they look at you weird, buddy. But there you are out there killing it as you'd anticipate. Give me a slam dunk. Give me a touchdown moment. Give me a career highlight for you. It can be anywhere at any point in time. Just something that has just made you feel good. Maybe you get a taunting penalty because you rub it in someone's nose a little bit. Give me a career highlight.
I've got a couple of them. First of all, growing up in New York, playing hockey, being with the New York Rangers when we won the Stanley Cup was one of the great moments of my career. We did a transformation of Madison Square Garden where we rebuilt it from the inside out, which was a big renovation project, and I was a part of that, which was great. Working on the Rams and the Chargers, moving to L.A. and working on SoFi Stadium was great. But without a doubt, Danny, as I look forward, the biggest slam dunk, touchdown, whatever you want to call it, will be being a part of having being a part of the team that brings the Olympic Games back to our country. It only happens a couple of times in your lifetime. And, you know, I can't wait to be standing there at the opening ceremonies in 2028. So while I've had some fantastic experiences, I'm just excited about the future and excited about what bringing a Games to this country and this city means to everybody.
Ryan, you're a mensch, buddy. Really appreciate the time, dude. You're interesting as hell. Thank you.
All right, Danny. Thank you.
Thanks again to the Chief Business Officer of LA 2028, Brian LaFemina. Do you see what I'm talking about? Did you guys get it when I was talking about in the intro? You were probably listening to the intro, and if you got this far, you're going, oh, get over yourself, Danny. Stop it. You're gushing too much about this guy. You've had two straight guests, John White, former Secretary of Education for the state of Louisiana, and now you got Brian LaFemina. You're over-gushing about these guys. But don't you see it? Don't you see what I'm talking about with him? He didn't say I basically one time. It was always we. It was we did this, and here's what we're doing, etc. Make no mistake about it. He is leading it. He is the guy. He is the one that's making all these different things happen, and he's bringing people together. And sure, everybody's working hard. I'm not saying they're not, but this is what Brian is able to do. He's so modest about it. He lets other people, you know, people like me, quite frankly, tell you how great he is. So good for Brian LaFemina. A couple notes that I wanted to pull out of the conversation. First, this is something we didn't actually get to that I wanted to make sure I mentioned. Let me rephrase. We did get to this a little bit right at the beginning when he spoke about how inclusive this bid is, and you know, inclusivity and the like, that's a buzzword that's going around. People are using it, and I get why. It's something that, you know, makes everybody feel like they're part of something. But it really is here when it came to LA 2028. It's not just lip service. They did a cool thing, just little ways that they're involving what LA is. What do you think of when you think of LA? You think of entertainment as well, right? You think of the home of movies and TV, music and stars, right? Well, there's plenty here. They've got this representation, this thing that's really, really cool that they've done. There's a million different. If you go to la28.org, okay? If you go to the site, the A rotates. The A that you see, so the L is the L, and the A kind of continues to change. They got a bunch of different people from all walks of life. Folks like Alex Morgan, U.S. national team soccer player, Billie Eilish, recording artist, Allison Felix, a world-class track star. All these different folks have their own version of the A. They got to design it, and they got to submit it. And these are, you know, folks that call LA home or had a great deal of affinity for the city and the state, et cetera. And they're part of it. It's a really cool thing that they're able to do. Like, for example, Michael Johnson, world famous track star. I will never forget him running 19.32 in the 200 meter dash. One of the most exciting things I've ever seen in sports. Him running the 400, just drubbing people by stride upon stride upon stride. He's got an A. Really cool stuff like that. If you go there, again, Reese Witherspoon has one. It's just stuff like that I think is really neat. Again, finding a way to make people feel like they're part of something and give ownership. And going back to his experiences with the NFL, kind of setting the stage for Los Angeles, for LA 2028, things that people kind of don't realize kind of behind the scenes, right? The pro football, in the NFL specifically, it's really, yes, we see the games on Sundays and sometimes Thursdays and you know, Monday Night Football. And we see the players and we think of the players as the game. The NFL really is a group of 32, kind of the Green Bay situation notwithstanding, owners that have made deals with local sponsors, with cities, that sort of are a conglomerate of independently owned franchises. And they get together and decide this is how the games are going to go, right? And the players have the opportunity to play, and everybody makes a lot of money, and it's awesome. But really, it's about owners and just as much about the relationship with the city, as long as it's profitable for these owners. And you get to keep the ball rolling. So it's imperative that guys like Brian work behind the scenes. Guys like Brian are not out front. They're not the players. They're not the coaches. They're not doing the press conferences. This game that they play that we all love, or so many of us do, is at the forefront of this thing. But behind the scenes are everything from stadium deals to sort of corporate tax rates and give backs and all the logistical dots that have to be connected for these games to be able to go off as they do without a hitch. You got to be in touch with local law enforcement and anything that's, again, nothing sexy about it. It has got nothing to do with, you know, who caught a pass or what defense stopped someone else on a third and one. those sort of background logistics that allow the games to be showcased and shine are what Brian has done so well, really, throughout his entire career at times with the NFL, Madison Square Garden, now with LA 2028. So I love that answer that he gave, kind of, again, about that background and his experiences there. And again, he's so modest and he'll demur so much when it comes to this thing. But what you see in the example that I used in the interview, and this was a true story, where I saw like a member of an ANC, like a neighborhood commission, stand up and do this big grandstanding speech because they knew there'd be one newspaper there and they were trying to launch their campaign for some sort of local office. And they used a little hearing about a baseball field that was going to help a bunch of people as their moment to kind of shine and get their name on the map, etc. These Olympics are going to go forward. They've been awarded by the IOC, and everybody is on board with that, right? Well, you're always going to find that grandstanding politician who will do something and say, for the sake of argument, how can we spend $1 million on a stadium when there are people that, you know, don't have electricity? How can we do that? And it's an overly simplistic argument. And I understand the sort of the pathology behind it, but we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can do two things. We can have LA Olympics 2028. We can build an infrastructure. We can do some of those things and maybe help some folks along the way. Can everyone be helped by the Olympics? No, probably not. But is it a net positive? That's what the Olympic Committee, that's what Brian LaFemina and his group at LA 2028 are trying to accomplish. They're trying to ameliorate some of those things. But you're always going to have those obstacles from a political perspective, because inevitably, when you have to involve local governments in something, it becomes political. When you have to have city ordinances, infrastructure, a lot of different, again, sort of ducks in a row, when it comes to it, you're going to have to see some of those political infights. And to this point, knock on wood, it sounds like Brian and his crew have been able to navigate those challenges with great aplomb and ease. Considering we're all in this bizarre time that we're in here, pandemic division, hopefully winding down, knock on wood, but still, there's an awful lot of work to be done in that regard. And as cases continue to climb, it's a little bit easier right now for everybody to be kind of going through this together and be on the same page. It's going to be interesting to see in the years leading up if they're still able to navigate those things as easily, because we're all coming together for the bid, but next step. And you've got, you know, really it'll be about 7 years plus before these Summer Olympics happen. Actually, right around 7 years when you start thinking about some of the math there. A lot of work to do between now and then. But I really appreciate Brian LaFemina's time. And I really enjoyed that conversation. Good to catch up with him. And it's good to have you guys with us. Really appreciate you guys checking out the show all year long. We've done 34 of these episodes now, which is pretty neat. From a fledgling idea that I had and all the work of my producer, Andrew Russell, who is going to fix this episode too, quite frankly. I messed up a bunch, as I always do, and he makes it sound as good as it can. It's still my voice, and it's still my dumb face here talking to the microphone, but I appreciate him and you guys as well. Andrew Russell is at Kiwanda Sound, kiwandasound.com, for all the sound editing needs that you need. They will take care of it because they're the most asbestos, as far as I'm concerned, and so are you guys. So once again, happy holidays, happy new year to you. Check us out at interest_pod on Twitter, You Seem Interesting on Instagram, wherever you find your podcast. You can find us, just search us, and my stupid face will come up there. I'm holding the microphone. That's how you know it's me, and it's all about me. Once again, one last time to our Patreon subscribers, patreon.com/funnydanny. You're the best. You want to help support the show, that's where you go to do it. Until next time, and probably next year, to be honest with you, You Seem Interesting.